Positive Chats podcast officially for March 9th. And, you know, today is going to affect every single one of us. It is hard to get away from our phones. And we're catching up with the executive editor of The Federalist, Joy Pullman. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, man. Thanks for being on today. You know, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know which direction this is going to go because this affects all of us at one point or another. And then we have to figure out a way to scale down our enthusiasm because all of us are so addicted to our phones. Where do we even begin, Joy?
Well, you know, there is something new about this that I have observed in just in recent years that I don't think was here before. And it's that I think more and more people are aware of the negative effects that smartphones specifically, but I include in that like all screens that include apps designed to constantly engage your attention. But I think people are increasingly aware of that and really, you know, there's like this distaste, even though many, you know, probably most of us are addicted, you know, more and more people are realizing that even if they're still, you know, experiencing the addiction and then sticking to their phones, they don't like it increasingly. Mm. And so that's a new thing that I didn't see a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's weird, yeah, too, because for a lot of us, we have figured out a way to do our jobs with our phone and exclusively on our phone, but we work more hours per week. I mean, good grief. I mean, I know for myself, at the end of my week, I look and I see where my phone, because I have an iPhone. And so and I'm assuming Droid does the same thing, where at the end of the week, it'll say, hey, you average this many hours per week. And I'm looking at that number each week, like some weeks are up, some weeks are down. I average like about 80 hours myself, and it shouldn't be that way.
Wow, that's wild. But, you know, I mean, The numbers that you're reporting are also very similar for children. You know, I wrote a couple of months ago about a study that found that, you know, middle and high school young people outside of school hours and outside of assignments for school were spending the equivalent of a full-time job just staring at some kind of phone. You know, so, and I just thought, I remembered to my own middle and high school years and all the wonderful things I was able to do at that time, you know, really before I hit adult responsibilities. I was on the debate team. I trained ponies in 4-H. You know, I had friendships. I wrote letters. You know, I did crafts. You know, I went to the state fair. It's just so many things that filled my time because, you know, there weren't cell phones there to take all of the creativity and basically the motivation that boredom gives you. You know, I didn't have that in those years, and I'm very, very grateful for that. You know, so all of us, you know, it's you know, these companies are basically, you know, using human quirks and ways that our brains work against us in order to, you know, their goal is, you know, more user engagement. And what that means is forcing you, compelling you, making you feel like you have to stare at your phone even when you don't want to.
Mm. Well, especially when you take a look at like Netflix's Social Dilemma came out a few years ago, where we find out that we have become the product. And we find out there are apps that will freeze our attention because it'll send a notification and kind of tap you on the shoulder. It's like, hey, you need to look at this right here. We don't care if you're driving and doing something that's going to prevent hurting somebody else, but you got to look at my phone because I said so. You know, what do we do? It's everywhere.
Well, I mean, I think the answer really is just as simple as saying no. I mean, and I realize it's not easy, but it's not complicated. You know, so for example, in my home, my children get, you know, one family movie night a week. That is the basic limit of their cell phone or their screen access. I mean, they're young. My oldest son is 12. Sometimes they'll watch, you know, how to do it, you know, videos on YouTube, but that's with an adult present. But we basically, you know, we have an almost no screen home. Mm. And that's actually worked out really great for us. And as a parent, I have hours where I'm on my phone and I have hours where I'm not on my phone. So I kind of mark it out that way for myself because, as you mentioned, I have to do it for work also.
Wow. All right. So you're a parent. And so here's the question that we have for you. Let's just start right here. So we're kind of set the foundation. We set the stage. Now, a lot of this is geared towards, okay, we had to figure out a way to scale things down with our kids. As a parent, how do you take the lead on that? Because you just said a second ago, a lot of your work surrounds the phone, but you're also taking hours where you're off the phone. How do you set the tone with the kids?
Well, I mean, it is true that, I mean, I think one of the top things parents need to do is model it. And so I tell my kids, look, mommy doesn't want to be looking at her phone, but here's what I'm doing. I have to answer this email from my boss, right? And I also say, you know, look, you know, mommy doesn't like being on her phone, but, you know, at dinner time, I stop looking at my phone for the rest of the night. So I'm modeling for them, you know, self-setting limits on myself, and why I'm doing that. And so I'm instructing them about the effects of this on their brain so that when they do, you know, when they do get jobs and they need to have cell phones, that they also have, you know, a model of how to handle that and how to use that superpower in a healthy and constructive way. And the other, the other thing is, look, parents don't tell their kids no because it's painful, right? And I'm a parent. I have a bunch of kids. You know, nobody likes to say no to your kids because you know they're going to throw a tantrum and they're going to nag you. Well, you know what? Just don't let them do that, right? If they throw a tantrum, impose a consequence. If they nag you, impose a consequence. And it may it's going to take, you know, detoxing like it is for any addict. But you have, if you think of this as an addiction, you know, you think, oh, if I was handing my kid heroin and he, you know, demanded me that I give it to him and threw a tantrum and nagged me about it, would I say, well, okay, just a little bit of heroin? No. You would say, I don't care how much you scream, you're not getting it, and you're not going to treat me like this.
Well, Robin Joy Pullman, she's the executive editor of The Federalist, and we're catching up about screen time and our phones and, you know, just looking for ways and just really guiding our kids. Because, so, Joy, the question that I have here is, you know, we're finding out that research has come out. We've been on our screens long enough. We're understanding that valuable time is being taken away. Time where you could invest is now being wasted on the phone. We're killing time instead of investing towards something else. So now that we've identified that we have some tendencies that we need to burn out, what's the first step for ourselves and for our kids? What are the first steps to, like, okay, I've got this fidgety thing. I've got to check the phone because of FOMO, fear of missing out, but I can't look at that. Where do we start?
I mean, what I did when I, you know, realized this was a problem for myself, I started deleting apps from my phone. The only way for me to get on, and I also stopped, for example, during all the lockdowns, I got off of Facebook just because I couldn't handle arguing online with people that I cared about. So I just, you know, just set it down for a while and eventually never picked it back up. You know, I'll pop on there to look for something on Marketplace, you know, or that's only one way I, you know, can catch up with an old friend or something. You know, but you take the app off of your phone or your tablet or whatever, and I put it only available on my laptop. I have to look it up. So it's putting a little bit of difficulty rather than instant, you know, ease, just punch a button and it shows up. And then when you're not getting those notifications, once your body detoxes from that, the FOMO goes away.
Really?
And it feels really great. And then when you have more attention to spend on people face to face, the people who are actually in your life day to day, that feels really good. And then you're replacing that fake sort of, fake and non-nutritious social interaction with much more, fulfilling and meaningful social interaction. And so you get your needs met for communication that these online technologies exploit, but you do it in a more healthy and fulfilling way, you know, one-on-one with your family, with your neighbors, with your community. It takes a little bit of a transition time, but it feels really good.
Interesting. So you're saying, basically, for the most part, shut the notifications off. That way you're not always...
Oh, yeah.
That way you're not always reminded...
I turn all of my notifications off for the apps that I have to have. Because, for example, you know, some friends and I, we buy local, you know, organic produce. We swap money through Venmo, right? I have to have that.
Yeah.
But I don't get any notifications from it. And so kill all the notifications. And then, it's kind of a process of setting boundaries for yourself and trial and error, right? Try one. So one that I do for myself is I have certain hours where I'm on for work. I'm available. I check my email. And then I have hours where I'm not available for work, right? So that may work for, you know, folks like me who are professionals. It may also work for families, you know, where you have a child who has a lot of online, you know, school assignments. You just kind of work out a specific sort of boundary for, you know, each item, and then do one at a time until you're in a place where you're happy with how it works, where you're able to use the technology and not have the technology use you.
You know what? It's really funny. This is this actually happened in real life a second ago. Joy, as you were given that last answer, I have an iWatch, and my watch just shook a second ago because there was a notification that hit my phone, showed me on my screen on my watch. I was like, you were given that answer, and of course, I naturally had to look down to find out what Instagram sent me. You know what? We are really, really in the loop of everything, and so you're talking about scaling back from notifications so that you don't get distracted.
Yeah, and it really takes, for example, I'll talk about one study that I recently read about, because I read about technology use all the time. And the study was talking about, you know, how people, when they were at an event taking pictures of the event, they had far, far fewer memories of actually participating in the event than the people who put the cameras down and were just there and present themselves. Hmm. And, you know, by having these notifications irritate us all the time and distract us from what we're on, they're erasing our ability to learn, to connect with people, to focus. And that both has relationship effects as well as professional effects. You know, so we're actually seeing I am pretty positive that the widespread adoption and use of all these distracting constant notifications, like we're just, you know, like these little test subjects in cages being twitched and buzzed constantly. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that that effect is what's contributing to the fact that, the United States had seen for decades an increase in average IQ score. Around the 2000s, that just reversed. We're seeing now an average decline in American IQ. And it has to be that all of these twitches and buzzes that constantly distract and disrail us are absolutely part of that effect.
So you're giving examples as to why it really is true. Our brains are being rewired by our gadgets.
Right. You know, so as you mentioned before we went on air, you know, people don't believe this. Also, you know, there's psychologists have researched this at some of the top, you know, institutions such as Yale University. People don't believe that they cannot multitask, but it is true. You can only put your attention on one thing at a time. And the more that your attention is driven to switch from thing to thing to thing like a goldfish, you know, the worse it gets at remembering anything at all. And of course, remembering is the foundation for, again, relationships, for all learning. So how can you advance professionally? How can your children learn in school if they have the attention span of a goldfish? They can't. You know, so we are degrading our own selves as a society and our ability to love people. I mean, there was a number of years ago, I went on a reporting trip to a highly regarded, high-performing school in Colorado, and I met a teacher there who made the insightful observation to me that, you know, what you give your attention to reveals what you love. And so if you don't give attention to your children, to your spouse, to your neighbors, you don't love them. If you're allowing yourself to be distracted from focusing on their needs and perceiving, you know, the communications that they're sending you, then you're reducing your ability to be, you know, to love them. And nobody I know wants to not love, you know, his wife or his children or serve his customers, right? We that's not our actual goal, but we're sabotaging ourselves, you know, when we allow our attention to be completely degraded, and we're disabling ourselves almost, you know, from being able to love the people that we want to love. And so we have to stop it for our own good and for those we love.
Well said. Well, I'm Joy Pullman. She's the executive editor of The Federalist. You're a wife and you're a mom of six kids, and you just published the ebook. It's 101 Strategies for Living Well Amid Inflation. Now, you know, it's going to be your mom of six kids. Here's the big question to you, because the big thing that we tend to do, the kids screaming in the back seat, we're driving somewhere and it's like, here, look at this screen.
Yeah.
What else do we do? And so we're not going to throw a phone or a tablet in their hand. What's the alternative? What do we do?
Well, you know, just 10 years ago, that wasn't possible, right? And we've had cars since, right, the 1920s. You know, so we had almost a century of cars and kids without the ability to hand them a movie. So what did people do? Well, here's what I do with my kids in the car. We play I Spy. I sing nursery rhymes to them. They just jabber at me, and I engage with them because, you know, that's the number one thing that builds a child's entire framework for his future learning is the language development that he does, you know, and especially in his first 5 years. And the top way to increase a child's language development and therefore entire brain is by talking to him. It's responding one-on-one to the questions that the young person asks, the observations they make, and just basically giving them instruction and mentoring. And so if your kids are staring at a screen, first of all, they're being mentored essentially by strangers. You have no idea, you know, who created the things that your children are looking at, what their agendas are, what their values are, what their beliefs are, you know. And so would you ever just let your kids walk down the street and pick a random house and walk in and start talking to the people there? I wouldn't. I check those people out first, right? You know, so I want my kids to be, you know, getting their information and their little sponge brains from good, reliable, loving sources. And I can't vet all those strangers on the internet. And many of them, you know, most of them possibly don't have my child's best interest in heart and don't share my values. Right. So you should be the person passing on your thoughts and your values to your children, because that's what connects your child to a community and teaches the child how to love and build his brain.
Mm. Well, when the kids are on the screen, what do you recommend as far as like safe? Because it's possible now, and we're finding out somebody, because TikTok just introduced recently, there was a guy who did a split side by side, his left picture and his right picture. And there are filters that can filter you to look like 30 years younger than this guy.
Oh, yeah,
like in his 50s. Yeah. So there are so many predators and so many new innovative ways they're getting into your kids' phones. As a parent, how do you protect that? Because, okay, I'm going to give you the screen time, but now that you're on the screen, where does safety come in?
Well, I mean, I actually wouldn't give my children any access to the internet without direct adult supervision. So, you know, when they're teenagers, I would expect them to be, you know, looking at things. Well, right now, you know, when they watch their movie, they're in the family room. My husband and I are washing dishes, you know, doing chores. We're walking back and forth, and we select the things that they watch. And when they are older, you know, I'm going to frankly recommend that when they get a job and they need to talk to their boss, that they get a dumb phone, text and talk, you know. And they don't need that till they're 15, 16 or so. You know, the internet, frankly, is just, it's a portal to hell. There, you know, I mean, there's just so much evil and wickedness on there. And there's really nothing that kids need to see on there. I just don't know why any parent would give their total pervert strangers unfettered access to their kids. And I mean, that's just, of course, that's my answer. You know, other people have other mitigation strategies, right? I mean, you can, and we do put, for example, porn filters on, you know, all of our devices. We have one on our home internet. You know, of course, I'm going to, you know, require that all of my kids have that when they get a phone. Mm-hmm. But I mean, there's a lot more things besides just straight porn, and it's harder for the AI to detect now. So I just think really avoiding it as much as possible is really the best strategy.
You know, it's interesting because you mentioned that. I wonder, now I'm not, I understand technology to a point, you know, but as things race forward, after a while, it's like, okay, I've got my own stuff to take care of. You deal with the technology and I'll take care of my own stuff. Now that a lot of us are switching over to 5G, where let's say Verizon, T-Mobile, a lot of us are switching over to 5G where we have an internet router inside of our home, but it streams off of an outside tower. A lot of what you're talking about, like the porn filters, can we get those there? I wonder if we can even get those there at our home routers if we're streaming off a 5G tower that's outside someplace.
You know, I don't know. I'm not that technically advanced. I mean, we do have a home router, and that actually our router itself has the porn protection on it. But I couldn't give you details on that because my husband set that all up and then gave me the password.
Oh,
so that's all I know. But I know the name of it. We use the service called Canopy. So if folks want to look into that,
there
that's
you
what
go.
You can do.
There you go, Canopy. How do you spell that? Because sometimes you see it with a C, other times with a K.
I'm sorry. Do you mind repeating the question? You can probably hear my little guy torturing me in the background.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we picked up that. Yeah, just don't give him a phone. Don't give him a phone. Canopy is the... Canopy.
If I was off the phone, he'd be fine.
Yeah, there you go. I'm assuming Canopy is spelled C-A-N-O-P-Y, Canopy?
That's right. Yeah, gotcha. Like a tree canopy.
Gotcha. All right. We're wrong with Joy Pullman, the executive editor of The Federalist. And so she's, I have all kinds of things that are going on. Well, she just published her ebook. It's called 101 Strategies for Living Well Amid Inflation. She has other books that are out there. And so, you know what, Joy, teach us about you for a second. How do we find you online and find all your works and then follow you, which feels a little bit backwards compared to the screen time we were talking about easing down, but it's a little bit backwards, but how do we follow you?
Well, actually, I mean, my favorite way to keep up on things is by email subscription. So I follow writers and publications I like, and we have that for free at thefederalist.com. You can sign up for our free daily email roundup, and that will include anything that I have on there as well.
There you go. And I guess the last question I would have for you is, because we spent some time talking about today's culture and about we identify now that we have a problem, and we identify now how this affects us and how we think. I know it's sort of like, I don't know if there's a right or wrong answer to this. Where do you see this in 5 years if we don't deal with this today?
Well, you know, I think I'll mention something that my colleague John Daniel Davidson said to me. He encapsulated something that I had been thinking about this. and he put it this way, you know, in 5, 10, you know, however many years, we're going to have a culture of people who are basically their brains are driven by screens. And then we're going to have a subset of people who, you know, can detach themselves from screens and live a non-screen life. Mm. And one of those groups is going to be in charge of the other.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. And now that we have that release of the AI, that artificial intelligence, that voice everyone's talking about.
Oh, I mean, and I mean, again, metaverse, you know, you, I mean, we already have legions, you know, the very number one reason that we have the historic high of young working age, non-disabled men who aren't working is because they're doing video games, right? They're in their mom's basement, she's feeding them, doing their laundry, and they're watching video games and porn, right? So we already have a major dropout of our society's production ability simply because of pre-metaverse video games. And once we have, you know, full VR, and that's in everybody's house, like cell phones are now. I mean, I think we're just going to see people, like, you know, drop out of life. They're going to, you know, hook up their brains to the internet and try to live there as long as they can. I mean, this is already happening in South Korea and Japan, for example. You know, so, I mean, this is, again, this is kind of a ultimately a potentially civilizational destroying sort of thing, right? You have to have some number of productive people who are creating the servers, keeping the lights on, literally, you know, who are making food for people to eat. And if you have increasing numbers of people in society dropping out of producing and contributing, there's a tipping point at which, you know, many, many people are going to be without the basic things that they need. I know that's really dystopian, and may something like that never happen. But I just say things like that to emphasize how very serious it is. If you are destroying your kids' attention spans and your own, you're destroying your giving to other people that really you have a moral obligation to have as a member of society. We all need to be giving as much as we can, not just passively consuming and receiving. And sitting there and staring at a screen trains us to be passive consumers who do not give to others, and that's frankly morally wrong. And whoever, you know, knows about it and sees that has a duty to do something about it. And compassionate, right? You know, what the choices that we make teach our children, and you know, handing them a phone teaches them something, you know, and parents have an obligation to think about what they are teaching and molding their children into when they do that.
Exactly. And then one more time, can we get your website and then how we can follow you just so we have it?
Oh, yeah, just go to thefederalist.com. That's spelled like the Federalist Papers without the papers part. Or you can just, you know, Google my name or Google the Federalist. Or sorry, don't Google. Use DuckDuckGo.
Nah.
But then, like I said, we have a, you know, an email, free email list you can sign up for and make sure you don't miss anything from us.
Joy, thanks again for spending some time with us today.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.